Hi, this is Eugene B. Coulson with Mind Controlled America on the PBS Internet Radio Network. You can reach me at eugenebcoulson@yahoo.com. Eugene B. Coulson at yahoo.com. Now, if you live in America, you have mind control to one extent or another. Me, I'm a laboratory CIA MKUltra Operation Monarch mind control victim. But one of the mind control things they're using in the election season is, well, we're doing everything we can. We're looking at the new technologies. We're the costs of fuel are because we use too much fuel. The bottom line is that it is a bold-faced lie. Several weeks ago, I did a show with Kurt Anaheim talking about the hydrogen cell car enhancement units that you can have installed on your car. And I'm here with Roger Gemphill, who, in fact, just installed one of these hydrogen units on my car. We're road testing it as we speak, kind of the mileage enhancement we can get. Now, Roger, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and the hydrogen unit and your contact information and so forth.
Okay, this is Roger Hemphill. I'm a dealer with United Community Services of America, and Dutchman Enterprises is the outfit that actually produced hydrogen assist fuel cell kit. My background is that I'm an electronics kind of guy. I went right from high school into the Navy and got trained as an electronics technician. Went into the Navy's nuclear power program and was trained as a reactor operator on fleet ballistic missile submarines. And after I got out of the Navy, well, that was from 69 to 75. I just did a 6-year stint in the Navy and got out and went to college after I got out of the Navy and got my electrical engineering degree, and worked in the electronics industry for the past 30 years. And about 5 years ago, I found out about Dennis Lee and the project that he was trying to bring to America, the United Community Services Program.
And isn't that about the power generator?
Yes. One of the main things that we were promoting through UCSA was trying to register people who would be willing to be witnesses to the new technology that Dennis Lee had developed. He has a permanent magnet motor and it's a permanent magnetic generator as well.
Now, isn't this a device where America can have energy for almost next to nothing, unlike what our leaders are telling us? Oh, we need to develop this stuff. It's not out there yet.
Yes, it is a basically it's a it seems like it's a free energy machine because it doesn't burn fuel in the main sense that we understand it. It is actually producing energy from the energy that is stored in permanent magnets, and it's a little bit hard to explain that to a layman. But the motor that we took on tour, Dennis took it to 47 different cities back in 1999, and invited people to come up on stage with their own test equipment and everything like that to verify that the power that was coming from the batteries.
And did this motor ever fail in front of any scientists, professors, or technicians?
No, it didn't. We don't have evidence, and we videotaped all of these different presentations that we did. There was nobody that was able to refute the evidence that we had that it took about 450 watts of power to run this 3.1 horsepower motor, And when you do the conversion from horsepower to kilowatts, we found that we were putting in 450 watts to excite the motor, but the motor horsepower-wise is putting out 3.1 horsepower, which converts about over 2,000 watts.
You mean to tell me that the United States government and the big industry are keeping secrets from the American people? They don't want you to have this low-cost energy? Is that what you're telling me right now?
It would appear that that's the case, you know, that they do not want this type of technology in the marketplace because it would definitely change the whole complexion of the power industry.
Now, isn't Dennis Lee trying to organize every stadium in the United States to be filled up with people demanding they want this energy because we're sick and tired of being raped by the government and the utility companies?
Well, that's what the witness program is about. We can have people join clubs. I have a club that's called the GetPowerClub.com.
And how would we contact you, Roger? Why don't you put your contact information, phone number, web address, everything?
Well, I'd prefer not to give out a phone number, but you can contact me by email, and you can visit the website, GetPowerClub.com, and there's contact information there at that website. Or you can email me at Roger, R-O-G-E-R, at GetPowerClub.com. And what we're looking for is you can still join the club. It costs $20 to join the club, and then I will send you a witness registration so that when we stage this event next year in July, we had hoped to be able to do it this year, 2008, but we've had to push it back to 2009, and we will be having a motor generator system. It's called the Hum Sun generator, hummingbird motor, which is what I was describing to you a few moments ago. And then there's a generator called the Sundance generator that we're going to couple with that motor. So we've got a motor that's 400% efficient. It's putting out five times the energy that we were inputting into it, and it's going to be driving a very high-efficiency generator.
Now, Roger, we just installed one of these hydrogen cells on my car. Why don't you tell the people about that and what kind of results you've been getting and so forth?
Well, the engine technology is another separate division of the same project that we're doing here. We have all kinds of different energy technologies, but the engine technology that we're using is from Dutchman Enterprises, the HydroAssist fuel cell, which is what we put on Eugene's vehicle here today, and we're road testing it now to see if we can see some improvement in his gas mileage. It actually has a water gas generator that just simply takes distilled water and produces monatomic hydrogen and monatomic oxygen, and we're just simply mixing that in the intake of the vehicle's air system. And then there is a gasoline covalizer that we add to the gas tank, which helps to break down the larger size gasoline molecules and breaks them into more easily burned and lower temperature burned molecules. So we're going from like dodecane, which is a 12 string hydrocarbon chain. About 30% of your gasoline is actually that big, and we're breaking it into smaller molecules like propane, which is a four chain hydrocarbon molecule.
And this is simply by vaporizing water and using that gas system to go into the intake of the engine?
Well, the breaking down of the gas molecule, that's all done with the chemical that we add to the gas tank. That's why we call it a covalizer, because it softens the covalent bonding of the gas molecules so that they can be more easily burned. But when we couple that that aspect of the technology with the water gas that we're injecting into the air system, then we get a phenomenal increase in combustion efficiency.
What does this unit cost to buy, and then what does it normally cost to have it installed?
We sell the systems for $995, and the installation is an all-day project for a trained mechanic, and it takes about 8 to 10 hours to put in. We charge $500 for that.
And what is the best result you've had with improvement of gas mileage on these installations?
I've seen it vary from, we guarantee you'll get at least 50% improvement, but I've seen as much as 200% improvement on some of the vehicles that we've done.
And what kind of cars were those that you had that 200% improvement?
We saw I believe it was a 98 Toyota Corolla that we were able to tune up at the class up in New Jersey. It went from 23 initially on the road test to over 78 miles a gallon.
Did you have one of your fellow dealers tell about a Honda Odyssey that's getting 91 miles a gallon consistently now?
It wasn't a Honda Odyssey. That's one that we've had a problem with because of the type of O2 sensor that's used on it. Vehicles that have standard O2 sensors or AFR sensors are the ones that we have the best results with. I'm not familiar with exactly the type of vehicle that you were referring to there, Eugene.
Oh, you were just telling me about the other day when we were working on my car.
Oh, okay. I think somebody called in and said they had a Honda Pilot that was getting like 91 miles a gallon. I don't know what the original numbers were on that particular vehicle, though.
Now, when you install these, do they require some additional adjustments because of the computers and carburetors on the cars?
Exactly. That's what usually takes the longest time here is once we get a system put in and producing the gas and covalizing the gasoline and preheating it, there's also a vaporizer that we use in the system, and all of those components work together. But now we've got to convince the onboard computer system in your vehicle that it's okay to lean the engine out.
Are you telling me that these computers are designed to use as much gas possible?
Well, they're designed to run on very inefficient gasoline. I was describing the long chain molecule that's in some of the gasoline. Our gasoline companies could additionally crack that gas and make it much, much more efficient to burn than what it is. But approximately a typical engine is only going to burn about 20% of the gas you put in it, and the rest of it's going to get burned in the catalytic converter and blown right out your exhaust pipe.
Well, here we stop at the gas station. We're going to do a little fill-up. We just did a 40-plus mile road trip, and I'm going to fill up the gas and see what kind of savings we got. So be patient. We're doing this live. We're not sitting in a studio or at a home. We are getting ready to test the hydrogen cell unit that the government and the big industries and oil don't want you to have and don't want you to put your faith in, technology that anybody other than them could produce. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about that other, that PCC thing that's coming out in the future?
Yes, the next technology that we're coming right on the heels of the HAFC, or the hydrogen assist fuel cell, is called pre-ignition catalytic converter. We call it the PIC system for short. And that actually is going to use the HAFC as the pre-processing unit for it. And then we're going to take the preconditioned fuel from the HAFC, the water gas, and pipe that into our pre-ignition catalytic converter, which is actually harvesting the heat coming off the engine to we're actually generating a plasma vapor where we're breaking down that gasoline molecule even more. it's able to get, we believe this system here, we've actually had prototype data that showed that the PIC system on a Chrysler 318 engine in a Dodge conversion van, I believe that this was like a 2005 conversion van that they were using as a test bed for this new system, they were able to get 180 miles a gallon on that big 318 V8 engine, and that's what we're developing a production model of the PIC system for, and we're looking forward to that because, you know, we desperately need some kind of fuel solution in America, and that PIC system is really going to be the answer for us, I believe.
Put 0.997 gallons of gas in the gas tank after 40.6 miles. So we got 40.6 divided by 0.997 equals. Okay, I got 41 miles a gallon. I was getting averaging around 32 prior to that. And Roger, will the computer make additional adjustments on the engine with the unit as we drive more?
Yes, exactly. You've got the adaptive memory going on in that computer that is going to continue to learn how to run the hydrogen assist unit. And I would expect that you may get another 10 miles a gallon out of this thing. You might get up to 50. So we're gonna look for that to happen over the next tankful or two tankfuls of gas.
And isn't it a good idea to go back and have it checked again about 30 days later, see if you get maximum efficiency?
Right. The fuel cell, it's made out of stainless steel, and as the fuel cell plates get conditioned, there's different impurities that are going to be pulled out of that stainless steel. So we're going to have to flush that fuel cell to make sure that it's putting out the needed water gas from that. And that's a big portion of what makes the system work. So that should be an improvement 30 days from now, that we'll flush that system out again and get the gas production to its maximum.
Why don't you tell us about the other products you sell that could help people save money on heating and air conditioning, detergent, and whatnot?
One of the other main products that I handle through the website is called ThermoGuard paint. It's a two-step process. The first is a aluminum type silver paint that you paint on a wall, and it can be internal or external use. It's designed to reflect radiant heat, and there's a white ceramic coat that we put on top of that, and even though you have just a few millimeters thick coating of paint on there, there's a ceramic component to both of those paints that are actually little micro spheres of ceramic, and it's like painting an insulation on the wall, and thus it slows the heat transfer through the wall, or you know, it keeps the heat in the winter and keeps the heat out in the summer, so that you're reducing your heating and air conditioning costs.
Why don't you tell us about those magnets that you put in the washer, so you no longer have to buy a detergent for your washer?
That's another one of the products that we have is a magnetic laundry system that helps to ionize and reduce the surface tension of the water, and thus you're able to chemically soften. You're actually able to magnetically soften the water rather than to chemically soften the water with all of your different soaps and conditioners that you put in there. It is possible to cut down on the rinse cycle, because if you don't have a lot of soap in there, then you won't need to rinse it as much.
Well, thank you very much, Roger. You got a few minor things you need to do to tape up this engine and whatnot, and we'll take the show into another direction.
Okay. Give me a
thank you very much, Roger. Wilson with Mind Controlled America. We just did a segment on the brainwashing of America to think that the energies that they're using today they're using the best technology possible, when that's a total lie and a total fraud. Technology has been around for quite a while for hydrogen cells, hydrogen assist cells, and whatnot. And I brought him on because I want the people to know that there are things you can do to save money. Yes, you will have to spend some money initially, but there are things that can be done to make your energy more efficient. Well, now we're going to take the show into another direction. We're going to talk about mind control on the clinical level. We're going to talk about satanic ritual abuse. We're going to talk about MK Ultra, Operation Monarch, and what those are and how they did it to me. I was born, I'm 51 years old. I was born, small town America, you know, thought I grew up a normal childhood, went to high school, graduated, went to a little bit of college, worked, got married, had a wife and kids, and everything was honky-dory. Now the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey would say. In reality, my father was sexually abusing me since from birth, more than likely. And I didn't remember none of this. I suffer from repressed memory syndrome, which is real. There's a repressed memory or false memory foundation, which is set up and run by the CIA. There, because so many people are remembering what the government has done to them, what the Satanist, what ritual abuse is, what MKUltra is, what is CIA mind control. That is real. And there's over 3 million people in this country they've done this to. And to make someone like me, they usually start out with a molested child. They molest them from age 5 on or whenever they can get them, which causes the mind to disassociate and to split. And once you have that disassociated mind, they can program it like a computer. When Creole Helton moved into my neighborhood when I was 5, he profiled me, and because I was so abused and had already split my mind from the abuse of my father and his friends, he got my father to put me into the program. They were super patriots. They were satanically, ritually abused people. The coven or cult or grotto that he got us into were cannibals. They would cannibalize people several times a year, preferably the young children or babies. These people are ghouls. They are the worst thing on the face of this earth. And for the most part, this is the crowd that's running this country. Not all of them, but quite a few of them are involved in this. And we'll name names on this show, but we'll give you the opportunity if we named your name and you want to come on this show and say, I am not involved in that. I, George Bush Sr., I, George Bush Jr., I, John McCain, I, Hillary and Bill Clinton are not devil worshippers engaged in this kind of activity. Please come on this show and refute that, because I believe you are. I've had numerous people tell me you are. I have repressed memories of some of you people involved in satanic ritual stuff, involved in CIA mind control. Well, then Creole Helton, in between the sexual abuse, the torture, and they'll lock you in, you know, boxes with snakes, rats, mice, bugs, and leave you in there till you just, you know, have a nervous breakdown or freak out, and that's what they want you to do, because they can get your mind to split more than once, and then they can create more than one mind-controlled entity. These entities are called alters. And initially, they will train you maybe with an oral sex alter, an anal sex alter, a homosexual alter, a girl, a boy, whatever. Those will be the initial ones. And they will use you for their demented pleasure
whenever they want. I can remember one fine neighbor, Earl King, wanted to take me on a motorcycle ride when I was 11. And that's what I remembered, until I remembered the rest of the story. Well, he took me on a motorcycle ride, and then we got off, and he dialed me up with cue words. They can cue us up with triggers. If you've seen the movie, Denzel Washington's movie, Manchurian Candidate, that's really how it's done. But what they show on that movie is 50s, 60s technology. It's not what we have today. Today, they're much better. Virtual reality hoods, trip chairs, better drugs, better hypnotic equipment. And they're doing this on a regular basis, wholesale, to military personnel. I met an Air Force airman a few weeks ago, and we were having a conversation, and I asked him if he had any missing time. He said, yes, I had quite a bit of missing time. I said, really? I said, when was the last time? He says, well, I just got back from Iraq several weeks ago. I don't remember a weekend. I said, really? Do you have panic attacks? He says, yes. I said, do you have anxiety attacks? He said, yes. I said, when you close your eyes, do you see flashing lights like a lightning storm? Well, he said, yes. I said, do you ever feel like you're 3-4 feet floating above yourself and looking down? He said, yes. I said, guess what? You're a mind control victim, and they probably did it to you when you were in boot camp. He didn't realize that. He didn't like that. And I've talked to numerous soldiers. They're just trying to serve their country. They're trying to do their duty, trying to do the best they can. And our black covert government, the CIA and the DOD, are taking them there in the PSYOPs units that they have at every major military base. And they're doing this routine to them without their permission. I've talked to numerous other soldiers who said they would be told they're going to go on a military mission, and they'll get ready for it. They'll go draw their weapons, go get ready to get on the C-130, and next thing they know, they woke up three and a half, four days later. And everybody's wondering, where were we? What did we do? I thought we were supposed to go into combat. And nobody thought to push it further than that, because they're doing what they're told to do. Why would you want to join a military that, without your permission, is going to go in, they're going to use drugs on you, they're going to mind control you, and you're going to be doing their will against your own will, and they're not going to tell you about it, and if you say anything about it, they're going to kick you out of the military on a personality disorder like they're doing many of the men coming back from Iraq this day. You realize there's thousands of soldiers that have come back from Iraq and Afghanistan wounded and disabled, partially disabled, and they're being kicked out of the military because they have a personality disorder. And according to the military, if you have a personality disorder, they are not required to give you any benefits, any further medical treatment, nothing. Gee, what does combat do to you? I thought that gave you a personality disorder. Hasn't anybody heard of post-traumatic stress disorder? You know, you go to combat and you kill for them, and then they diagnose you with a personality disorder because now you're a killer, or you've seen too many atrocities or too many horrible things, or you're missing a hand or a leg, and you're depressed over it. Now you have a personality disorder. Now they don't have to pay you any benefits. What a fine thing that they do for us. Well, then there's the other crowd of us who never joined the military, never knew we were in the military, but they use us anyway. And in my case, my wonderful parents, when they decided to get out of the coven, they were given a list of organizations they could join so that they didn't have to die, because you don't get out on the feet first. Worldwide Church of God was the one they chose. Worldwide Church of God was a CIA mafia front, clearinghouse for mind control victims. And I started attending the church from the time I was 14 on. And what happened? I would be going to church, but when I was 16 years old, I disappeared for Christmas vacation my junior year in high school while we were in Worldwide Church of God. We didn't keep Christmas. So where did I go on this disappearing Christmas vacation act? Well, they sent me over to Vietnam for my sniper training. That was my first combat action. Creel Helton was training me from the age of 5 on. And Creel Helton was the first man in the Korean War that went out with a knife all night long. And everybody wanted to copy it because he was the big bad ranger that killed the most North Koreans. So they would copy it. Well, that's the kind of thing he was training me. And during the race riots in the 60s, why, what would we do? These people hated black people. They called them the worst atrocities in the world. Of course, it's the N-word and other words that they like to use for blacks. But fortunately for me, I never developed any of the prejudice my old man and most of the people on my street had. In fact, I remember my old man taking us to farmer's market downtown. Bad black area. But you had all these wonderful black gentlemen in suits and ties selling produce, roasted peanuts. You know, and they were the nicest, politest guys in the world. But the old man didn't have the guts to call them the N-word or coon or whatever else he'd like to call him. Oh, no, he kept his mouth shut. And I'm standing there, I was confused. How come these people don't act like they're supposed to? Because when I was 4 or 5 years old, I thought there were five seasons a year. I thought there was winter, spring, summer, and fall. And right before fall, there was riot season. I didn't know any different. And we were told that black people were the worst thing on the face of the earth. And keep in mind, these guys are Satanists as well that are saying that. Well, I found, you want to find somebody really spiritual, you find yourself a big black woman. And she'll say, oh, honey, child, she'll start talking to you in the sweetest way possible. You want to have a deep conversation right off the bat about things that most people won't up to, find yourself a big black man, and he'll open right up to it, and you'll have yourself a nice conversation. In fact, when I was a general contractor in California, the group that was the best I ever worked for were upwardly more mobile middle-class blacks trying to make something out of their lives. Now, but in America, especially through the 40s, 50s, and 60s, they want us separated. They had us separated. They would put the black man down. Then in the 70s, they put the black man up and started putting white people down to keep us racially at each other. They want us at each other all the time. It's a form of mind control. Well, let's get back to my little sniper mission in Vietnam. So I went over to Vietnam to get my sniper training with Alex Luan, Sergeant Alex Luan. He was the most notorious sniper in Vietnam. He was Green Beret under Charlie Beckwith. He went over there as a ranger. He was in Vietnam from 59 to 1975. Periodically, he came home. When he came home, he was a mafia hitman. So, I go over there. I'm 16. I've never done a sniper mission before, other than being taken to riots and shooting black people when I'm a child. That was my practice with Creel Helton, my old man. So I was given a Remington M16 Long Rifle Series 1, an M16A1, a 45, a shoulder-mounted hammerless five-shot Smith, a bunch of hand grenades, and a knife. And we went out on sniper missions. And you can read about Alex Luan. He was known as the Walking Arsenal in Hackworth's book, Soldier, came out in 79. And he talked about the most famous man in Vietnam, said he was a Green Beret, and he was a tall, blonde-headed guy from New York, and he was the most notorious sniper in Nam. And when he was in Vietnam, he was at home doing mafia hitmen things. But in reality, he was a short Mexican from California, and when he came home from doing missions, was a mafia hitman. And he was in Nam from 59 to 75. He was captured in 64, did a year in prison camp, escaped 65, and then came home. Well, I went over there, and Alex and his spotter would go out and report. Come back, nobody'd believe him. So they finally talked to radio operators to go out with him. First radio operator went out with him. First morning, they came across 28-man NVA patrol. 4.5 hours later, they were all dead. You know, a radio operator would go out with him more than 3 or 4 times, and they said, I would rather be dead than go out with him. Put me in prison. So pretty soon, nobody ever questioned Alex Luan again. So I went out with Alex Luan. My weapon was a Remington M16 Long Rifle Series 1. And I went out 4 times. I got 89 kills. If anybody out there was a decent shot, went out with him 4 times, you'd got 89 kills. He was that good. And when they were getting ready to recycle me home, because Christmas vacation was becoming over, the NVA Special Ops Company showed up just south of DMZ. And they put me as a tag along on them for more experience. It was a three-lurk team. Each lurk team was 5 men, 2 Marine Scout snipers. and they put me on as a tag-along, and they had F-4s flamed on the tarmac awaiting for our call the whole time we were out because we were supposed to call in a napalm strike. We spent the night in the bush. And at first light, we came into a clearing of family-sized rice paddies. We got about halfway between the tree line and a knoll in front of us. We're 40 yards from this knoll, and the NBA Special Ops Company was behind the knoll, and they opened up on us with their AKs. Fortunately, they did not have any SKSs. And these were Chinese AKs, which means after you put a mag through them, they're not very accurate at all. But what made this company special was they didn't run. Typically, when you get in a fight with the NBA, they'd fire a couple magazines and then run like hell. These guys didn't run. They'd take your weapon from the dead, defeated soldiers that they'd kill and continue to fight until they're resupplied and they can fight no more. Well, so almost every Marine in boot camp is told about the Bunker Hill in action, and most people in the Army as well. But nobody ever asked a question on why this man never got the Medal of Honor. Well, we're going to continue to tell you why. We went out into the clearing in an echelon right, which is a right-wing formation. I was the farthest to the right and to the rear. So what had happened was when they fired and were pinned down in the pit, I just fired, maneuvered, and ran back to the jungle. And why did I do that? Because the night before, they did this wonderful little ceremony on me that said, if you ever retreat or run in combat, you will be killed. And they took a staff sergeant, wrapped him, mummified him, and put him in a coffin. And then they pretended they buried him alive to terrorize me and said, if this is what you do, this is what we're going to do to you. If you run, you hide. He refused to fight. So naturally, I was terrified not to fight. It was part of my programming. It's terror-based programming, torture-based programming. So I fired and maneuvered and made it to the edge of the jungle line, and I circled all the way around. It took quite a while. And the NBA were so busy shooting at the other 17 guys that were laying in the rice paddies, they didn't think anything about me. It took me quite a while to circle around them, but I did. I came across a blown-off tree stump right behind them. I had a Remington M16 long rifle. I fired, I had one belt, one of the shoulder cloth ammo pouches, which is four or five mags, I can't remember, plus the one in the weapon. I emptied that. I had an M16 A1, one bandolero of ammo. I emptied every one of those, fully auto. And then I had a boot sleeves shot off Winchester pump, and I went in to get them. And after I emptied that, I dropped it. And they weren't realizing, but one, two, three, at a time that they were under attack from behind. And I had the 1911 Colt. I pulled that out, emptied that. Had two more magazines of the 1911. Then I pulled the hammerless five-shot Smith, and I'm out of ammo. Guy tries to wheel around and hit me with a bayonet. I elbowed him in the face, took away his AK, emptied it, left-handed on everybody. I picked up one or two more, and everyone was down, but the NBA captain, and all he had was a 9x11 Tokarev and a swizzle stick. So as I'm approaching him, he's shooting at me with the 9mm, and it's bouncing off the flak jacket, and I simple-ass stuck him to the liver, cut his throat. Then I yelled for everyone, ollie, ollie, income free. And they said, hey, Eugene, is that you? I go, yeah. They go, where are all the gooks? I said, they're all dead, but some of them are wiggling. So they stealthily reconnoitered around the hill, and they said, look at this, Audie Murphy ain't got nothing on you. Well, I'm not claiming to be some great, wonderful hero, but I did do a lot in combat. I'll give God the credit, because he protected me. Yes, I did kill all those men. Yes, it did happen the way I said. But it was an accident. I was at the right place, right time, right equipment, and right attitude. Mind-controlled attitude, I might add. And so they're patting me on the shoulder, saying what a great guy I am. And so I said, well, you know, there's an NBA battalion nearby. And they go, yeah. I said, well, hell, this took 15 minutes. Give me 2 hours, I'll kill them all. I was having a nervous breakdown. and I was gathering up all the ammo I could off of the VC. They said, well, you're out of ammo. I said, I'll use the gook ammo. So as I'm gathering it up, somebody hit me in the butt with a jelly morphine shot. I turn around, attempted to stick them with a knife, and two guys took the knife away, and they stuck me in the butt with another partial jelly morphine round. And I said, that's it. I'll use a gook knife. So I reach over to get it, and they hit me in the butt again. And so I was pretty wasted on that. And so our communication sergeant got on the horn. He said, our call sign was Delta 1, base was Beta 1. He said, this is Delta 1. Delta 1, come in, Beta 1. They said, go ahead, Beta 1. You have Delta 1, you have Beta 1. He said, acquired target's target, which means we found them. Or they said, what's your sit-rep? Acquired target's target, which means we found them. And they said, launch fighters. They were on the tarmac. The F-4s with napalm were on their way. They said, acquired communication started, said, acquired target, which means they're all dead. And they said, how so? One man got them all. And the communication sergeant was arguing quite a while with his captain. And the captain was quite upset, and he kept demanding the coordinates. And so finally Captain Moore got on there, and he's arguing with his other captain, and they're arguing back and forth. And he said, they're all dead. They're all dead. And I said, can I have a beer now? And they said, yeah, tell him Eugene wants a beer. They said, yeah, the guy who did it wants a beer. I said, you can't have any beer in an operational zone. You know that's against protocol. And finally, this is going on for a while. These guys are laughing. The F-4s are flying above head. We hear them. And finally, Sergeant Lalonde says, Sergeant Lalonde requests to speak with Colonel Beckwith. That's Charlie Beckwith, founder of Delta Force. He wrote the book, Delta Force. And in that book, the character he describes as Boris is me. I am not Polish. But the reason he used the name Boris is one of my handlers and trainers, the first G.I. Jane, the one they called the Mermaid, I called her Natasha, and she called me Boris, like in Rocky and Bullwinkle. Natasha, 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 yes, Boris. Remember the cartoon? Well, that's why he used the name Boris. So anyway, if Colonel Beckwith was in a meeting with the Lieutenant General, and Sergeant Lalonde wanted to speak with him, he was going to speak with Sergeant Lalonde. He said, what's your sit rep, Sergeant? He says, pretty incredible. Eugene got them all. He goes, no shit, no shit. And he wants a beer. And so then you hear the mic bounce off the desk, and the captain picks up the mic and says, back within beer, inbound, what are your coordinates? And he says, we're not giving you our coordinates. So we hear from a Army or Air Force colonel that those fighters are on the tarmac. Well, took a while. We finally got that, and Beckwith and the beer arrived, and after a few beers, I was pretty drunk with the morphine. And so I was on the first Huey out of there. Everybody was quite happy to see me, but before we got the beer, I started to cut off their ears, because these guys had ear necklaces like you wouldn't believe. And they said, no, 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 they're going to come out here and take a bunch of pictures. You wait. After they're gone, we're going to make you a nice necklace. So I'm on the first hill you out of there. So I make it back to the base, which was a Marine base up north, and I needed a shower. So I was all high on the morphine and the beer, and I stagger into the shower. It took me a while. And so I go into the mess hall, and at the front of that mess hall is a Marine sergeant, and said, you can't come into my mess hall taking heroin. I said, no, I didn't take heroin. It's morphine. He says, you think you're going to come into my mess hall high on morphine? I said, no, I didn't take it. They gave it to me. He said, why? Are you wounded? I said, no, I am not wounded. I said, I killed too many people today. He said, how many people did you kill today? I said, 110. And he screamed at the top of his lungs, chief of the mess hall, report. So the chief comes out of the kitchen and says, what's your sit rep, Sergeant? He said, that's him. That's him. That's the guy we've been hearing about all morning. He said, that kid? That can't be who we heard about. He said, that's him. He said, son, how many people you killed today? I said, 110, and I'm crying. I'm having a nervous breakdown. He says, how old are you? You don't look old enough to be in the NOM. I said, I'm 16. He says, you mean you tell me you quit high school, come over to NAMM to fight with us? I know. I said, I'm still in high school. This is my Christmas vacation. He goes, oh, my God, I've heard about guys like him. And he turned to the sergeant. He says, you are to go over to the MP shack, and you are to get me 5 MPs on my orders. And if they're not going to come over here on my orders, then you tell them they're on dog food till further notice. Then you D him out over to the base chaplain and get him here ASAP. So he says, he turns to me, he said, son, are you hungry? I said, yes, chief. He said, what would you like? I said, you got any steak? I said, he said, yes, what cut? I said, you got any T-bone? He said, how thick? So I held my fingers up about 2.5 inches. He said, no problem, you got it. How would you like it? I said, medium rare. What else would you like? Baked potato, sour cream and chives, and a salad. He said, what would you like for dessert? I said, you got any banana cream pie? And he says, no, I don't. It's going to take me a while to make them, but you're going to get one before you leave here today. So what happened after that was, I said, well, can you make us some pie for my friend? He goes, how many? There were 17 other guys with me. He said, you got it, 18 pies. And I asked for a cigarette. And 5 guys gave me cigarettes, so I took 2 from each. 3 guys lit it for me. And then as the other soldiers were coming in, the MPs instructed them to stay away and leave me alone, stop staring. So I, and then before I got my steak, Father Mulhaney shows up. And I believe his name was Mulhaney. Keep in mind, I'm a mind control victim. I don't remember everything perfectly. And so Father Mulhaney looks at me and he says, are you Catholic, my son? I said, no, I'm not. I'm non-denominational. He said, what denomination? I said, Worldwide Church of God. He says, I've heard all about Worldwide Church of God. And let me put this invitation out there to any of you evangelists of Worldwide Church of God and the major options, Meritus Group, Living Church of God, United Church of God, David Hume and that group. We would love to have you on this show because you're all a bunch of frauds, in my opinion. You're charlatans. You're merchandising the word. You pretend to teach the gospel. All you do is drive around in your fancy cars in your 3-piece suits in air-conditioned offices and tell everybody you're doing God's work. When did we ever see Jesus do anything like that or the other apostles? They had to work in the heat and the hot sun. You men think you have it rough if you have to go outside and get your mail or pull a few weeds. You're all a bunch of frauds, in my opinion, and you're involved in this mind control crap. That's what probably Father Mulhaney knew. And he says, you know, I started coming apart, and I'm crying, and I said, how can God forgive me? I killed somebody's mothers, some mother's sons, brothers, nephews, fathers. I said, how can God possibly forgive me? And he says, you see these hundreds of men marching around out here in the parade ground? I said, yes, Father. He said, you probably saved hundreds of their lives. He said, besides, these are all a bunch of heathens and they deserve to die. And so he says, so you want forgiveness? I says, yes, I do, Father. He says, then you're Catholic today. And he yelled to his assistants, go get my sacraments. So that's what happened. And naturally, I shared my food with the Father, but he insisted I eat most of it. Well, and they brought me a bottle of wine and some beer, too. And I couldn't walk too well when I got done eating. So I'm being carried across the parade ground back to my barracks. And here comes a reinforced company of Marines marching down the parade ground. I think this was on December 23rd, 1973. I know it was late December in 1973. And the Father Mulhaney was wearing his robe, the scarf thing and the hat, held his hand in a prayer fashion, and he's leading us in a procession in front of this reinforced company. And this captain comes up and he says, what authority do you have to interrupt my parade? And he says, we're carrying on a religious ceremony. And he says, this isn't Sunday. You're not in church. You have no authority here. He says, you see that young man over there? He goes, yes. He said, that's that young man that killed that NVA Special Ops Company by himself. He goes, no shit, no shit. He says, stay right here. So the captain had organized everyone into a row of honor guard down each side to my barracks. And we got halfway between the mess hall and my barracks, and I pulled away from the MP's arms, and I kneeling on the ground. I said, Father, I want communion now. And he says, no, wait till we get to barracks. I said, no, I want it now. So Father Mahaney gave me communion after the Bunker Hill action. Pretty soon, two Catholics close to me dropped on one knee and says, I want communion too, Father. And he ran out of wine. He sent his assistant to the officer's mess with instructions to bring the finest wine and the finest bread. And pretty soon, every Catholic in both lines drops to one knee. And they carry me into the bunker, and I'm watching this. Pretty soon, everybody in both lines drops to one knee. And Father Mahaney gave them communion. And he'd come up to a Jew, and he'd say, are you Catholic, my son? Because he'd have the Star of David on his chest. He said, no, I'm Jewish. He said, what makes you think you have the right to take Holy Communion in Jesus' name? He says, do you believe in Jesus? He goes, yes, I do. He says, when did you start? Right now. Everybody took communion, and they didn't have any bread at the officer's mess, so they took communion with wine and pork rinds. And so Father Mahaney comes in all shaken, and he says, you are one miracle that never seems to end. I just gave communion to Buddhists and Jews. I'm going to have to report. The Pope is probably going to read about this. Then officers started coming in, and he insisted that they take off their hat and not say anything so I could rest. And Father Mahaney says, son, may I read you something to help you sleep? And I said, yes, Father. Do you have a Bible? He said, yes, I do. I'm glad you asked. He said, what would you like me to read you? I said, can you read me the story about King David's mighty men? And he goes, you're quite incredible. If you were alive then, and someone else is reading now, we'd be reading about you then, now. And I'm going to give God the credit for all that. All this happened because I was a mind control victim. I've been on countless missions. I've saved thousands of lives over since 1973 in numerous missions. And I'll give God the credit. He protected me on each and every one of these missions. And everyone out there listening to this or reading anything about this mind control thing, you know someone that is mind controlled if you aren't yourself, and they don't know it, because most people never really realize they're a mind control victim. I had met Kathy O'Brien and Mark Phillips in 1976 at the Granada Forum, and they did their speech on Satanic Ritual Abuse and Mind Control. And I bought her book, Transformation of America. And I didn't realize I was a mind control victim until 4 years later. But the mistake that they make in this book is they present the mind control like it's not done to that many. There's over 3 million people in this country they're doing this mind control routine on. I've talked to countless military personnel, military intelligence, and so on and so forth, that have confirmed that they are doing this wholesale on military bases. And they're doing this to a lot of children that are on military bases. Well, dad's off to war, mom's at work, the wolves are guarding the sheep. And if the teacher isn't part of the operation, they'll do the mind control routine to them as well. But now they're better at it than they used to be. It used to be it took someone like me, started as a 5-year-old child, to make you a mind control victim. Now they don't need as much time. They've got better drugs, better equipment, and they can do it to most people. Not everyone, but most people. And if you're a mind control victim like this airman I met several weeks ago, and he recently got married, they will continue him in the program. And then they will do the same thing to his wife. And then when he has children, they will do them to their children too and make them mind-controlled sex slaves like they did mine. Thank you, Mommy and Daddy. Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, George Bush Sr., because I was George Bush Sr.'s favorite hitter. And I understand his health isn't too good. What a shame. But how do these guys live to be as long as they do, like Kissinger, Gerald Ford, George Bush Sr., stay so healthy looking? These guys will take transfusions from babies or abortion clinics. These guys are ghouls. And I've been told this by numerous people. Now, if I'm mistaken, Mr. Bush Sr., come on this show and tell me about it. Kissinger, you too. If these, all these CIA personnel and all these military intelligence and mafia people that I've talked to were mistaken in telling me this, well, we'll give you the opportunity. And if you claim to be a Christian, like all those in Worldwide Church of God and so forth, then we'll do this little biblical vow based on our life in the hereafter. And then we will give you the opportunity to say, no, I'm not involved with this. I was never involved with this. Guys like Robin Weber. And then we will take the reverse speech technology and we will use it as a lie detector to see, in fact, if you're telling the truth. Now, reverse speech is how I found everything. If you don't know what reverse speech is, go to reversespeech.com. David John Oates. This is how I found they did it to me. If you would like to contact me, you may contact me at eugenebcolson@yahoo.com. eugenebcolson@yahoo.com. Now, reverse speech is you just take a tape recorded message of anybody and play it backwards. This is how you can tell if you are a victim. It'll be a portion of your thoughts or beliefs. Toddlers learn to speak in reverse first. When you record a toddler doing their gibberish, quite often, play it backwards, you can quite often hear them talking. Adults, it's a little more difficult to pick up. You usually have to develop an ear for it. But it can be done. Now, go to reversespeech.com. I only have a few seconds left. And if you have any questions on mind control, keep them relevant, not too lengthy. It, put your phone number if you want me to call you. I will contact you if you think you're a victim of mind control. Or if you're one of these people I named and don't want to, or you want to come on my show, or you want to call me up and yell at me and tell me I'm a fraud or a liar, I'll give you that opportunity too. Or let's just say you really want to do, we'll go off to an island someplace and fight a duel to the death. That would be fine with me too. But you have to finance it. You guys got the money. You've stolen most of mine, as well as my family, my business, by wonderful people like Renato Corzo, who's dying of pancreatic cancer, Dennis Pelley, who's dying of pancreatic cancer, Charles L. Neef, I understand, Major General Charles L. Neef, I understand he's dying of pancreatic cancer. What a shame. All these men dying of the same disease first, together. Think God may be doing this. Stanley Rader died of pancreatic cancer. Joseph DeCosta Jr. Sr. died of pancreatic cancer. And on it goes. So if any of you people would like to come on this show, especially you, Robin Weber, I'd love to have you on as my guest. And then we'll talk about religion. We'll talk about the Bible. We'll talk about your family. We'll talk about your former mafia son-in-law. We'll talk about your mafia connections. We'll talk about Joseph DeCosta's mafia connections from Chicago. I had Norm Edwards on several weeks ago, and Joseph DeCosta Sr. would mention his mafia connections and said, well, he's not part of that anymore, but he still knows them and still can get help from him. So I'd love to hear anybody that wants to call me a liar, a fraud. I'll take that on as well. And if you really, if you want to disprove me, I'll put you on my show. All right, this is Eugene B. Colson signing off, and thank you for giving us your time. My thanks to Donald Newsom and the BBS Network. Take care.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.